All right. It's Christmas Eve day. What'd you get me for Christmas? I'll wait and see. Paul Mercurio here. Hope you guys, if you're in the New York area, can check out my one-man show. We extended it into February. It's called Paul Mercurio's Permission to Speak. It involves the audience coming on stage or from their seats, talking about their lives. We get really great stories. It's completely improvised. We get some great reviews. You can check them out on my Facebook page and Instagram page. And there's clips from the show, too. You go to telecharge.com for tickets, and you use the code PMFAN. That's PMFAN. You get 50% off. And it's really cool. Been really proud of it and really excited that we were able to extend it into February. So I hope you can check it out. And check out deepdiscount.com for last-minute sale gift items on everything that you might want to get somebody for Christmas or the holidays. Go to my website, paulmercurio.com. Click on the Deep Discount logo. It'll take you right there. They got deals on TV shows, movies, music, swag, you name it, they got it. Amazing, amazing deals, especially for last-minute gifts. I have not shopped for my wife until today. I just got her EA Sports UFC for Xbox. Yes, by the way, my wife hates UFC. But I love it, so I guess if she can't use it, I'll have to use it. That's how that works. And they also have really great deals on new releases, like the new release for this week, White Boy Rick, starring Matthew McConaughey. Really, really cool and a little disturbing, but really in a good way. It's a story in the early 80s of a 14-year-old kid who proved to be a fast study under his low-rent gunner dad, Matthew McConaughey, and his growing notoriety in the city. Inner city caught the attention of the FBI, who would turn this kid into an informant. A really cool, cool movie. McConaughey's great, and so is this kid. Anyway, check it out. It's called White Boy Rick. It's on Blu-ray, and really, really great price on that. And just go to my website, paulmercurio.com, click on the Deep Discount logo, and that'll take you right there to get some great deals for last-minute gifts. Hope you guys have a great, great holiday season, and I can't thank you enough for being supporters of the podcast, and please tell your friends about it, spread the word, and don't forget my one-man show on Broadway, Paul Mercurio's Permission to Speak. I want to introduce you to my listeners, Ed Asner, 8-time Emmy winner, Golden Globe winner, known for so many great roles, Santa and Elf, the miniseries Roots, Rich Man, Poor Man, Lou Grant on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and then starring as Lou Grant in his own series. Really wonderful to have you on. I've been a big fan of yours for a long, long time. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you.
Just real quick on Elf, I really loved the Santa that you played because it was so real and not a caricature or too cartoony. Was that a conscious decision that you made, or was that in conjunction with Jon Favreau, the director, to kind of play it that way? Because I thought it really worked well.
I think Jon established the groundwork for that. Mm-hmm. And it was very easy for me to step in and be natural.
How much do you like to sort of be involved with the director in your projects in terms of developing the characters beforehand, or does it just vary from project to project?
It varies from project to project, and having seen most of the directors in the world on my way up, I was just as pleased when they stayed away as when they were present.
Right, right. One of the things that my acting coaches always tell me is if you get a direction from a director that you don't agree with, just nod your head and say, okay, and then just do it the way you wanted to do it, and they'll think you did it their way. Does that has that ever worked for you?
I think I unconsciously would do that from time to time. I would try to do it their way and feel ill at ease.
Yeah.
And then the next time I did it, I would revert to what I was doing initially.
Right. When you worked in an assembly line at GM, and then and you were also in the U.S. Army Signal Corps. Did you think about sort of making the military like a career, or was that just a
never?
No.
Never.
Just to...
No, I wanted to be an actor, and that's all I could think of.
Where did that come from? I mean, you know,
being on stage for the first time, and I did radio in high school and loved doing that.
Right.
I didn't think of acting as a career. And then in college, I stepped on stage and played Thomas F. Becket in Murder in a Cathedral. And it bit me real deep.
Yeah, that happened to me with comedy. Yeah, I know that feeling. It's sort of... It kind of picks you, I think, right?
Yeah. I couldn't resist it.
And then you got some good training in Chicago, right? You went to the University of Chicago, and that's a great town for theater. So
well, everything was hit and miss there. You didn't really get anything. I finally was barred from the university productions by the director of the university theater there, but he felt I had ruined his play of Antigone.
Why? What did you do?
Well, he felt I shouted too much, and I forced the rest of the cast to push his shouting as well.
Oh.
And that killed it.
Oh.
For me and for him.
Yeah.
So, fortunately, there was a splinter group at work at the theater at that time, or in the theater at that time, called Tonight at 8:30. And out of that, the rebels gathered and produced and did their stuff, and it established my relationship with Paul Sills when he created the Playwrights Theater Club.
And did you... did you find the transition from theater to TV in terms of the acting style and technique and process a big adjustment, or did it sort of flow?
Never. No, it was easy, very easy for me. No, never. I never really felt any conflict.
Mm-hmm. How, when you all were doing the Mary Tyler Moore Show and that character of Lou Grant, did you sort of, was that written, that character written as we saw it, or did you sort of help that character evolve into that? Because it was such a great juxtaposition to Mary and her personality.
I really don't know how to answer that. Mm. I know that when I auditioned, the two producers, Jim Brooks and Alan Burns, said, well, that was a very intelligent reading. And I said, yeah, what was funny? we have you back to read with Mary. We want you to read it all wild, wiggy, all out, funny, uncontrolled.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know what the hell he was talking about. But I started to leave, and I said, well, why don't you have me try it that way now, and if I don't do it, then don't have me back. I've never spoken like that before.
Wow, you said that in an audition? Wow.
Yeah.
And then when they wanted you to audition for, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but, and on top of it, they want you to introduce you with the star? That's ballsy and amazing. Wow.
Well, they said, well, we got another appointment, but go ahead. So I read it with maniacally.
Yeah.
And they laughed. He said, read it just like that when you're with Mary.
Uh-huh.
I spent a week, 2 weeks. What the hell did I do? How am I going to do it? And I went back and I did the lack of control again.
Yeah.
And they laughed again. And after they excused me, Mary turned to them and said, are you sure?
You mean they wanted you, but she was like, are you sure? That's what she said to them.
Yeah.
Did she seem a little frightened by you in the audition when you were doing it?
I was too busy thinking about doing it to their satisfaction. I didn't think about her.
Yeah. How did you not spend the next 2 weeks getting so in your own head that, because I've had that happen to me where, you know, you do it And I'm sure you did it great the first time because your head got out of the way, right? You were just going with your gut and all of that. And then how do you not get in your head and then that walk, you start to overthink it and it becomes stilted in 2 weeks later? How did you manage that?
I took off all the controls.
Just let it go.
Let the steamroller roll.
Yeah. And then as the series, got on the air and then picked up steam and all of that, was that character still evolving or was it set in stone pretty much from day one?
No, I think we were constantly evolving.
Yeah.
Constantly trying to shape the character, trying to find out what makes it work.
Yeah, yeah.
And they weren't that sure, and we were busy formulating the character from the get-go.
Yeah.
And through the blessings of God, we were untrammeled enough that we were allowed to grow.
Mm.
And it produced results.
Yeah, I mean, I like that they let your character sort of really be multidimensional and, have love interests and your relationship with Suzanne and all of, there was a lot of interesting, you weren't just asked to play one note, which I think was nice, did you all see that this thing was becoming the phenomenon that it became in the midst of doing it? Or were you too sort of immersed in it to kind of see it until after the fact?
We didn't care. I didn't care. Because I had the pleasure of reading future scripts.
Mm.
And they were all so golden, so rich, that all I could think of was it didn't matter whether we were canceled or not. I had a chance to do a character this rich, this rewarding, and it may never happen again.
Yeah.
And, so we went in with that dedication to the character, and Ted, of course, was in the wings and ready to deliver.
Mm.
Mary was ready.
Mm.
Rhoda came on. So
there's nothing more.
A lot of good things were happening.
Yeah, there's nothing more charming and fun just to see your character get disarmed by Mary's. You get tough with her, and then she breaks down, and you don't know how to handle it. And so, in a way, her character sort of manhandles your character, but doesn't intentionally. It was a lot of subtlety going on there to watch it, and it still holds up today. It was really great. Really great ensemble. And what was fascinating was that you have a great career as Lou Grant, and you play that character in a dramatic series and tackled issues of the day, which you don't see very often in dramatic series or sitcoms now. And how was that a tough pitch to the network, or was that a pitch to you guys from the network that they wanted to take this into a serious direction, this character?
No. The network, the first 2 weeks we were on the air, they had TV Guy print us up as Lou Grant, a comedy.
Huh.
And then I finally realized what the hell they were dealing with, so they changed that.
and did they complain? Did they push back? Did the network say, "Hey, we want this to be a comedy," or was it just not?
No.
Mm-hmm.
They finally realized what the show was that they were dealing with.
Mm. And you've always sort of had a deep involvement, in I'll call activism, and you had a tweet just today off of Trump. The Democrats are trying to battle the concept of a wall. The fact is there's nothing else that will work that has been true for thousands of years. It's like the wheel. There's nothing better. And you tweeted back, the wheel? How about flight? electromagnetism. Thought is good. And then this is my favorite. Thought is good. You should try it sometime.
What?
You said thought is good. You should try it sometime. You've been so involved. I know. You've been so involved in issues. You were 2-time president of the Screen Actors Guild. You're involved in this cause, the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, which is a free speech organization that's dedicated to protecting comic book creators and retailers from prosecutions of content. What do you make of where we are today in this political arena? We're so divisive. Does the pendulum swing back to some level of normalcy?
From your mouth to God's ear.
Yeah.
I shake my head at the, but at the same time, the idiocy of Trump's presidency. It's a chicken coming home to roost, and it's long overdue.
In what sense?
Of exposure of America dabbling in areas that it should have kept its nose out of. Here he's pulling out of Syria, and I cannot stand the thought of Assad continuing to rule those people,
mm-hmm.
or the Kurds being isolated the way they are.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, his pulling out is creating an end to this adventurism that we've been engaged in the Middle East ever since George Bush took us there.
Mm-hmm.
And so as big a cartoon as he is, we're stumbling onto some right actions after all.
Did you think Obama was right to pull us out of Iraq?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly do.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many people we've lost, how many people over there have been killed because of our intrusion.
Mm.
But we got to stop butting in all the time.
Yeah.
Because that all it becomes is an extension of our military feelers, our military expertise.
You mean it's just flexing muscle for the sake of flexing muscle?
Yeah, that too.
I mean, also this thing of fake news. I mean, what's troubling to me is it's troubling that Trump peddles it, but what's worse is that there are people that actually buy it. You know, he's got these followers. You know, I'm not giving him an excuse, but like, you know, if a guy's willing to sell you a bag of goods and you're willing to buy it, then you deserve what you get. And you know, you just see this fake news, and he keeps saying no collusion, and there's a bunch of people around this country that buy it. And I'm not chastising people for voting for him. Everybody has a right to support who they want, but there's some stuff that's just so crazy and over the line. And you're like, there are really people that just buy into this. And my concern is that there's no nuance of thought anymore. There was a time in this country, you know, not too long ago when you could either criticize or through satire criticize a particular party or candidate. And the people who supported that party would laugh about it and go, yeah, you're kind of right about that. But nobody has a sense of humor about anything anymore, and nobody can take criticism for their own views. It's really unhealthy, I think.
Yeah, but we finally have found a home for all of the disgruntled people in our nation.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And that's what they ought to call the GOP. Party of the disgruntled.
You've seen a lot. I mean, what caused you to get involved in this Comic Legal Defense fun. That I'm really fascinated by that.
No big deal. I was presented with the prospect of supporting it.
Mm.
I saw the free speech aspect of it, so I said, fine.
Yeah. Great. Well, it's really been a pleasure talking to you, and I know you have a one-man show, A Man and His Prostate. You also are got a Netflix comedy series coming out, Dead to Me, and you're doing Soap Myth as well. Tell people real quick what Soap Myth is about. It's very interesting.
It's written by Jeff Cohen,
mm-hmm.
and it deals with the fact that at Nuremberg, there were convictions and people sentenced who were involved in the turning of Jews into soap. Over the years, it became disavowed. And this play deals with this gentleman's efforts to get it reinstated again,
mm-hmm.
to get the criminality of it reinstated.
Mm-hmm.
And he finally succeeds at the end, so he dies while doing so. So it's a very nice piece.
Great.
A tragic piece, but a good
piece. It's good that that's out there. It's a real pleasure to have you on, and continued success, and continue with your activism, and continue with your great tweets. They're very entertaining.
You keep up your work. It's important.
Yeah, I think it all is. Every voice counts. All right, Ed Asner, thank you very much for being on.
Thank you, man.
All right, there you go. Ed Asner. This guy's like a national treasure. It was like really cool talking to this guy. This guy's been acting for like 50 years. Don't forget my one-man show, Paul Mercurio's Permission to Speak on Broadway, running through February. Go to telecharge.com for tickets. Hope you guys have a great holiday and really enjoy your new year, and we'll see you on the other side.